This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we are going over episode 4, recentering of White Lotus, a.k.a. Resort of Lies.
Resort of Lies. It is not the Resort of Lies.
Oh, really? You think it's the Resort of Honesty?
Uh-huh. No. Uh-huh. No. I think it's the resort of questionable employees, though. Uh-huh.
So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you need to go back to episode 1 and just start from the beginning. You may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? You might be ready for one dry kiss, but you're definitely not ready for this episode of White Lotus 4, Recentering. But this is One Dry Kiss, a cussy irreverent podcast dedicated to rom-coms, dark comedy series, formerly Hallmark movies. We do it all. We throw the spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. I am one half of that podcast, and I'm here with the other half of my spaghetti that I threw on a wall and she stuck 40-some-odd years ago, Corinne Edding.
And I am here with the woman who I would definitely share my plunge pool hotel room with, Miss Tamara Cosio.
You're such a liar. You would, but you'd have, like, rules around the plunge pool. You'd be like, you can only use it for 2.5 hours if I'm in there and I get the best floaties.
I just have requirements around the outfits that you have to wear. Like, you can only wear bathing suits that properly coordinate with my outfit so that we can have particular look for when we go into our private plunge pool.
For all of our Instagram postings, I get it. And I can't look better than you, I'm assuming.
No, you can definitely look better than me.
So you're a good friend. Most of the time you'd be like, you have to dress down. You can't be more stylish, sexier, or prettier than me.
No, you're 100% obligated to be looking hot, 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 hot.
In the plunge pool.
Hot, hot, hot.
In the plunge pool.
Exactly.
I accept your invitation to the plunge pool, and I will bring all my accoutrement for it.
Nice. I'm so excited about that.
Well, first of all, I have to say, I have Halloweened the fuck up out of my place.
Yes, you have.
I sent you pictures.
Glorious pictures.
It did not encompass the full scope of what I did here.
Gentle listeners, she paused our recording so that she could go and readjust skeleton lights that were on her window.
It was necessary.
Priorities. Am I right?
Upsa. If you notice that the screen is a little dark on my end, Corinne, it's because my normal desk light is now pointed at the bedroom window so it can properly reflect the skeleton decals that I have on there.
Oh, okay.
Which are flanked by skeleton-shaped lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In addition to all kinds of little light-up pumpkins and black candles that we have everywhere in the living room. Kind of went off on a little bit of a Halloween bender, and it was totally worth it because it's put me in the spirit.
Ooh. You mentioned something to me about childhood and infomercials and really being jealous of the infinity hoop that I mentioned last week.
I don't think I said that. I don't think I said I was jealous of your infinity hoop.
What?
That was one of the things where I'm like, and those are the things Corinne buys. I see. Yes, Corinne, since we discussed infomercials,
yes,
it brought up a little jog of something in my memory where ooh. I wanted to discuss toys that I wanted to entertain getting as an adult that I never got as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought this up with you. The one thing was a slip and slide.
You said if I wasn't as old as I am, I would totally want a slip and slide, but I have passed this moment in time. And I say, I was just thinking about getting wrapped in like the big bubble wrap and just, you know, baby oiling it down and just woo.
Yeah, but then you won't get wet. See, I want to get the wet, like the splooshing in my face. But that was one of the things most notably that I still might want to get on. I just might not run at it and fling my body onto it. If somebody had put a slip and slide in front of me, I would require it to be on a slight decline, and I would make you push me down it to give me some momentum, but not too much. So I wouldn't be flopping my body onto it, and I'd be like, push my feet, Crane, push my feet. And then I would go probably negative 2 miles an hour down it, but still enjoy it immensely. But that's one thing I wish I had that I still, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out a way to relive that and make it a dream come true. Mm. And also Transformers.
You and me both, Transformers. Oh my gosh. Yes.
I want the 80s style Transformers, like the kind of sort of metal ones. I want those.
They were plastic. Transformers.
Were they plastic?
More than meets the eye. Yes, they were very plastic.
Oh, man.
Sorry to break it to
you. I thought they were going to be hardier.
Nope.
Damn it. Okay, well, I believe they're probably, we're hardier than the ones that we have now. Because the ones we have now broke when they came out of the package.
Oh, so disappointing.
Always.
I broke a few Transformers back in the day, so they weren't mine. And I just was like, look over there. I didn't break your Transformer. Just shove it over there. Yeah.
Do you have any toys that you would like to revisit in your adulthood, Corinne?
When I was a kid, I really wanted Transformers, but I couldn't have them because I was a girl.
Oh. Same. I mean, not same that I was a girl, but same that that was the
Well, you were, belief. And also...
Yes, no, I know. I'm saying, like, I was same that I felt the same way. Yeah. I couldn't have Transformers because I was a girl.
Yeah. There was just such a gender binary around toys, and I was like, I want so many boy toys, and mm-hmm. not boy toys, this isn't sexy men, but like toys that boy children played with, and I can't have them because I'm a girl. You know, just like I had to wear a dress when I went fancy places because I was a girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like,
oh, the 80s, yeah.
It is so much better now.
So much better.
I would have been a much happier kid in this era than I was as a child in the 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. And also, I have this longing in my heart for the Gem and the Holograms dolls.
Oh, yeah.
That I would want to get the Gem and the Holograms dolls. Mm-hmm. And that is only because, Denise, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm outing you.
Ah!
But when I was in my first year of middle school, I still loved...
You had a Gem doll or something.
I had three, I think. I had a couple of them.
Gem, it's truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous. Oh, Gem.
The music's contagious, outrageous. Gem is my name. No one else is the same.
Gem is my name. Gem.
Not that I remember it at all. But I think halfway in my sixth grade year, before school started, I bought my very last Gem doll and was so excited about it. Only had it for a few months till I was kind of doll shamed by my sister and was like, you're too old to play with those. Oh. You really need to put them away. And I don't think she meant that. I really think that her friend, who will remain nameless, convinced her to tell me that so that I would give all of my dolls to her little sister, which I did.
Ooh.
Including my prized Gem dolls and all their accessories.
What? Yeah. No, fuck right off with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my sister believed it, but I don't think she would have pushed it. But she's like, yeah, you need to get rid of those. And I'm like, no. And she goes, you're too old. I'm like, no, you're too old. Okay.
Oh.
So my little child broken heart inside my big adult broken heart wants the Gem dolls again.
Well, I still, like, I have suggested us recapping Gem. So, you know, if you ever want to do that, we can do that.
See, that's the thing, because if we did recap Gem the cartoon, I might be like, what the fuck is this shit? I don't even know. I want it to live in my memory as it is now, not revisit it and be like, this is bullshit.
I mean, who doesn't want a keytar in their life? Come on. There's so much we could do thematically around it, too. It'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm. So many 80s cartoons in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Thundercats, where I had my sexual awakening. He-Man with the homosexual undertones.
He-Man is interesting to watch as an adult. Or like, what? What? Really? No.
Now, that I could rewatch again.
He-Man? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if you really understand what you're getting into with He-Man. And I feel like Gem is a more solid product than He-Man is.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I think we need to explore these options more. Definitely. A He-Man Gem off.
Dun, dun, dun. It's like the, it's going to be like the Sharks and the Jets, you know.
Okay.
I'm going to be like, Jem is my name. And you'll be like, I have the power.
I just said I would watch He-Man because I want to see a banana-saw 80s cartoon that's not going to taint my fond memory of my beloved dolls that were lost to me at a tender age.
Oh, man.
But I think those are the only toys. I've just contemplated this not too long ago, and now I probably will add things to my list. And to get my wonderful career going and then be able to buy all the special things that I want.
Oh, yeah. No, you'll just have a room devoted to awesome toys and I will play in it.
Only if I invite you over. Depends on how freely you share that plunge bowl.
And not from when I was a child, but as an adult at Disneyland, they have these animators versions of child versions of Disney princesses, and they're like, mm-hmm. I don't know, a foot and a half, 2 feet tall or something like that. And I love them so much, and I totally want to buy all of them and play with them. And I'm like, where am I gonna put a bunch of creepy dolls? Like, I can't do it, but I want to. Yes.
Just hang them on your wall. That won't be creepy at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. I'm going to have them set up right above the doorway so that when you're sleeping out here in the living room, they will be watching you. They will be watching over you.
Yes. And then you'll probably wake up in the middle of the night and move them ever so slightly. So I wake up and I'm like, what the fuck? Is that one always there?
There's just going to be one hanging over your head.
2 inches from my face.
Snow White, what are you doing?
Good times. Yeah. I am not coming over anymore.
Hey, you are required by law and contract to come over in November.
As long as you don't have those 2 foot dolls, I'll be fine. I will make it if you don't have any dolls. I can't stay at your house if you're a dollhouse. If you're not a dollhouse, but a house with dolls.
I do have little dolls and stuff all over the place. You know that. But they're much more manageable size.
There's also a very glaring thing that we must go over before we talk about anything else, Corinne.
Oh.
A corrections corner. It was me. It was my fault. It was my mistake. Because in the first episode of the White Lotus TV series, I said that Paula and Olivia were about 16 and Quinn was about 14. That is incorrect. In this episode, there is a remark by Mark who says that the girls are college age and that Quinn is 16. So, my bad, and I don't know why I got it stuck in my head that the girls were 16 instead of Quinn. I blame Grease and all of the 80s and 90s movies where they cast inappropriately old people and asked us to believe that they were teenagers.
Look,
so.
I really feel like they are on the young college side of things from the shit that they're reading and the way that they're acting. They're still acting like teenagers. So I do not blame either of us for making that mistake, because if they were acting like college students that weren't like at the summer after their freshman year, I would have said, oh, you know what? I think they're older to you, Tam. No. But no, they act like
teenagers.
They're still going through their rebellious teenage years. So, yeah.
Yes.
No, that it was an honest mistake.
It was, and I don't know if we made any notations earlier on about statutory rape or inappropriate behavior because they were underage, but that was not the case. So if I did, my apologies, and I take it back, corrections corner.
Yeah, but they were still very young, regardless.
Yes, and deeply so. Like, they give the air of disgruntled teenagers.
I totally agree.
So my apologies on that front. Corinne, anything else you want to add?
I'm perfect, and I just can't help it that my co-host Tamara doesn't really get the details right on things. It's fine, though.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's talk for 17 minutes about how perfect you are, Corinne.
No. I totally went along with it. I completely agree.
Because you knew I saw it first. You're like, well, you've seen it. You must know. And I'm like, yes, I do. I'm a White Lotus expert. I am a purple chrysanthemum expert.
Mm-hmm.
That was my error. I was actually thinking about Purple Chrysanthemum, the movie, instead of White Lotus, because they're very similar.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And that one has 16-year-old girls in it versus this one that has college-age ones.
Is there actually a thing called Purple Chrysanthemum? Are you
No,
that
no, there's not.
Okay. I was like, wait,
I'm
what?
Just giving it a Corinism. There's like a whole myriad of movies that are just named after different colored flowers that have slightly different plots, but not entirely different. So anyways, Corinne, since you're so perfect, mm-hmm. can you please regale us with a perfect synopsis?
Oh, absolutely. I did mine ahead of time.
Nice.
Just FYI. I have started doing them before I do the script. I think it works out better that way.
I think so, too.
So Tam said to prompt me to do the synopsis, because I am prone to forgetting. Corinne, can you give us a tour of the previous episode of The White Lotus? Challenge accepted, Tamara. Challenge accepted.
Okay.
All aboard. Choo-choo. And thank you, gentle listeners, for joining me on this tour of episode 3. Just another man. Mysterious monkeys. Whoa. On our right, we see Tanya on a boat out on the ocean, spreading her mom's ashes with Belinda there for moral support. Oh, but wait. If you look closely, you can see another couple there. Why, yes, it's Shane and Rachel. Looks like they're trying to have a romantic meal, but kind of hard to do it with a loudly grieving adult daughter and ashes flying everywhere. Moving on to our next location, if you look to your left, you'll see Armand, the manager of the resort, laughing maniacally. Yes, gentle listener. Okay, you'd like to know why he's laughing maniacally? Two reasons. One, he's broken his sobriety and is now taking drugs courtesy of guest Paula's drug backpack, which he has absconded away with. As well as he is spiraling due to drugs and stress and has set up Shane and Rachel to go on the most unromantic Hawaiian boat ride possible. But enough of that. Let's move out to the pool where we see Quinn and his dad Mark talking. Mark, as you can see, is drunk as a skunk and promising his son that he'll now be very open with him. This is after... Mm. Yeah. I know. Gentle listeners, bad idea. Bad idea. This is after Mark discovered that his view of his dad was a big fat lie, and now he is trying drinking therapy, which, while a choice, is not always the best one. And now, before we pull into the station, our final stop is with the Diva twins, Olivia and Paula. Shh, we need to be quiet because Olivia and Paula are asleep. Oh, wait, Paula is leaving the room. Let's follow her surreptitiously as we see her going to a cabana and, oh, look, gentle listeners, Olivia is following her. Are we about to see a friend showdown? There goes Paula into the cabana and, oh, okay, leaves the door open? Convenient for us. Ooh, she's doing the bed dance with Kai, an employee of the resort. Not surprising, as he's a hottie and they've been flirting, but completely opposite from what Paula had been saying to Olivia, that Kai is some random giving her unwanted attention. Mm-hmm. Gentle listeners, the shitteth is abouteth to hitteth the faneth, but not quite in this episode. It's just setting it up in front of the fan in a big pile. I think Tamara will be the best to get us started on our next tour of episode 4, Recentering, which sounds pretty zen to me. So, Tam, take it away.
My God, I feel like I was on the Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland.
Right? I mean, that's so chilly. That's so chilly.
I was like, you would think a Jungle Cruise would be more appropriate in Hawaii versus a train ride, but I enjoyed that immensely.
Burp, burp.
Anywho, yes, let us get recentered, shall we? We open with a dark blue sky, with the sun hovering below the horizon. There's a female silhouette standing on the beach who is joined by a man. They embrace. It's Paula and Kai. They frolic in the surf and eventually sit and watch the water while Kai tells her what it was like growing up on the island. His father would take him and his brothers to the beach to look for sunnies, aka pretty shells.
Because I think of those as sunglasses, so I really appreciate him explaining.
Yeah. I'm all sunnies. When he did say that, I'm like, why do you call them sunnies?
I was wondering that myself, yes.
because they look like sunshine. Kai, I have questions.
Maybe they bring sunshine to your heart.
Mm. Then the family would go back to their patch to clear the waterways, feed the pigs, pull the taro. While he's telling her about his upbringing, she has a look of awe on her face. He smiles at her and asks, "What?" And she tells him, "You seem really real." And then she asks if the hotel was there when he was on his patch of land. Kai's face falls and he admits that the hotel was what pushed him and his family off of their lo'i, aka the land that was bequeathed to them by King Kamehameha. Mm. And his brothers are still trying to fight it, but they can't afford lawyers, or at least good lawyers. Paula looks appalled and states, "And now you're working for the people that stole from you?" Sadly, Kai admits that his brothers were pissed when he took the job at the White Lotus, but he's got to make a living. She kisses him, then realizes the time, rolls her eyes, saying, "Ugh, I gotta go before she wakes up." Kai looks confused. "Why? Isn't she your friend?" Ooh. And Paula finally divulges the reason for the gaslighting throughout these episodes.
Thank goodness.
By saying, "Olivia's tricky, and we're good as long as she has more of everything than I do. But if I have something of my own, she wants it." That kind of seems like a shitty friendship, and also for a good reason for keeping a secret.
Yeah, also, it was so interesting because, you know, in the last episode, how I was like, I want to be with somebody who gives me peace, you know, who doesn't give me anxiety, etc. And in this episode, I was watching Kai and Paula together. And the Paula that we were seeing in front of us with Kai was an interesting, open person who seemed pretty rad.
Mm-hmm.
And when she and Olivia are together, they're horrible.
Yeah.
And I just thought about how in there are certain relationships, and, you know, you see this happening with friends and different things like that, that a friend has another friend, and when they're together, they just bring out the worst in each other. And I feel like Olivia and Paula kind of bring out the worst in each other. And I was like, I think they need new friends.
Why are you looking at me pointedly when you say that, Corinne? Are you trying to...
Because you bring out the best in me and I don't have to worry about that.
You're like, I don't need to get new friends.
No. One of the things I like about my relationship with you is that you bring out the best in me. So I feel really good about our relationship.
Oh, okay.
Just like the morning prior, Paula sneaks back into the room and lays down next to Olivia, who immediately opens her eyes once Paula's back is turned. She knows. But we know that she knows because she followed out and saw Kai and Paula having sexy sex when they left the cabana door open. Why? I don't know.
Because it just sounds ominous. She knows. Dun, dun, dun.
Back in the manager's office, Armand is asleep on his couch, fully clothed. He looks at the time. He wakes up. Then he looks at the time and springs up and rushes out in a panic. We next see him scrubbing his face in a shower. At first, I thought that the White Lotus was a perfect place to have a bender because you have ample vacant hotel rooms to clean up in and a bevy of left-behind tourist clothes that should complement your dressy Hawaiian casual work look.
But, and mini toiletries.
Yes. Tam's just like, if she worked at the White Lotus, her like entire bathroom would just be filled with mini toiletries.
Tiny bottles.
Yes.
And I would act like a giant as I use them.
That's not the case, though, for Armand. He is in the hotel's posh spa. It is only a matter of time before Belinda arrives to work and hears him taking a shower. She calls out, "Hello? The spa doesn't open until 9, and if I were Belinda, I would be fucking terrified." But she walks up to the running shower without a stabby or a blunt, heavy object in her hand.
Say you were a spa manager in a spa, the Zen spa that they work at. What would be the most effective weapon?
Salt.
Oh.
Salt rock.
Oh, good. Yeah. I would be like, I'm going to hit you with this pamphlet. No.
The salt Stager? Lamp.
Mm, yeah. Salt lamp. Got it. Yep. Yeah. That is the correct answer. Mm-hmm.
And if you need a little like courage, you can give it a lick and it'll boost your sodium levels. She walks up to the running shower to see Armand slowly draw back the curtain and smile sheepishly. She informs him, "You know this is the woman's locker room, right?" Armand.
Sorry. I didn't spell check.
No. That's how his name is spelled. It's Armand.
I thought it was M-O-N-D.
I thought it was Armand. Oh, no, you're right. It is. It is A-R-O-M-O-N-D. Okay. But according to Tam, it's not. It's Armand. No, I'm just kidding.
Because he's a man, see? Uh-huh. That's why. Just so there's no confusion.
He looks fit to be tied, but Belinda just waves him away. Well, finish your shower. When he's done, he goes to the spa lobby. He probably has rummaged through the lost and found to find his fresh Luke, but that doesn't matter. Belinda is standing behind the counter with her hand on her hip, giving him the look, judging him harshly. Surprisingly, Armand is transparent about the previous night's events, about how he fell off the wagon, about the pills, the drinks, and even mentions, and I think the father in the trade wind suite asked me to fuck him up the ass. And that is Mark that he's thinking of.
Yeah, Mark Mossbacher, who wanted to get Armand Bach on his moss. But did he, though?
No, he didn't.
Yes, he was just interpreting their interaction as a come hither.
Because Armand was like, hey, you want to go, buddy? And Mark was like, I got to go. Yeah.
I just had questions about gay sex is all. Yeah. The logistics. The situations, that was just an informative conversation.
Yeah. Belinda is appalled, not at the fucking of the ass, but all the other stuff. But Armand assures her that he can't fall off the wagon again because once he stumbles, he falls completely off the beam. Mixing the metaphors, good job, Armand. She looks at him pointedly and says, if you're serious about your sobriety, get rid of the pills. Armand promises, yes, absolutely. But I see the look in his eyes, and that is the look of empty promises. Resort of Lies lives up to its name.
That Corinne gave it.
Yes. Look, when you see something that is so terribly named, White Orchid?
Lotus.
Lotus. White Lotus. It needs a better name in Resort of Lies.
Obviously.
The telenovela.
So Corinne could remember you.
Truth. I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah, that's fine.
I was super surprised that he came clean. Like, that kind of gave me hope because I'm like, oh, okay, alcoholics and addicts tend to lie to cover up their shit. And he was like, I'm just going to be clean. I fucked up. I fell off the wagon last night and I'm getting back on.
Choo choo. So, baby, choo choo.
Good on him. Hopefully he holds to that.
Resort of Lies.
Resort of Lies. Speaking of Mark Mossbacher and the Tradewind suite, we see Nicole Mossbacher getting ready for the day, only to find her hungover husband still slumped in bed. She makes angry throat-clearing noises until he wakes up and then asks him, so, what did you do yesterday? Mark stares at the ceiling and says quietly, I scuba'd. She nods knowingly while rubbing sunscreen on her arms and asks, but what about the other 8 hours? We had dinner without you. It was pretty uneventful. Mark finally admits that he got drunk at the hotel bar, but defends, but I was depressed. I was still trying to get over the fact that my father chose his sex life over his family. Nicole looks at him angrily and says, well, that sounds familiar.
And I'm like, Mark purses. Record scratch? What? Uh-huh, what is going uh-huh, on there with Mark? And uh-huh. Nicole, I have an inquiring yep. mind and I want to yes. know.
I know. You're like, can you say more?
Yeah.
Can
yeah,
you say more? Yeah. Nope. But no, he doesn't. Mark purses his lips as if he wants to say something, but instead nods in agreement. Ooh, there's something bubbling under the surface. Mm-hmm.
Need to know. Need to know.
Nicole, undeterred, asks, well, are you going to drink again today or are you going to participate? Mark plasters a fake smile on his face and shouts enthusiastically, participate!
It was really cute, though.
Yeah. And then repeats, happy, 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 as he heads into the shower.
Nicole then heads to the living room to wake up Paula and Olivia, the diva twins. She calls out, come on, girls, let's go down to breakfast. We already paid for the buffet. The girls unenthusiastically rouse while Olivia complains, Mom, Paula can't keep eating all this fruit. She keeps getting diarrhea. And I'm like, okay, Paula, then why don't you eat less fruit? Have you thought about that?
Nicole says that as well. I just left it out of the script. Then have a sausage, Paula.
Yeah, she's like, eat some protein.
Maybe she's a vegetarian. Have a pancake then.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's not hard. It's a buffet.
It's a buffet. There's more than fruit there.
Oh, yeah. I went to a resort in San Diego and they had a buffet at one of their like beachside patio dining areas. Uh-huh. And it was so good. They had seafood. They had oysters. They had crab legs. They had chilled shrimp. I would be eating that, Paul, if I were you.
Mm-hmm.
Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
And now I'm hungry. Damn it.
Nicole looks at them undeterred and Paula adds, it's true, Nicole. I have fructose malabsorption. Nicole looks at her incredulously before opening the door to Quinn's room/kitchen closet. But it's empty and she immediately glares at her daughter's accusing, do not tell me your brother spent another night on the beach. You have to be more protective of him. He could have been washed away by the waves. The girls glare back at her unconcerned. Paula says sarcastically, yeah, Olivia, he could have been kidnapped by some butt pirates. Olivia smirks at this and adds, or end up in a bukkake with a pod of dolphins. And just in case y'all weren't up with the latest dolphin news, dolphins are notoriously horny, and apparently when they are leaping from the water and diving back in, that's a form of masturbation.
Shut up.
Yep. They've also been known to sexually assault many a diver.
I've heard about the sexually assaulting divers. I just didn't know that them jumping out of the water was just to stimulate their nether regions. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, beautiful. They want to feel the sun on their skin. And that must be so oh, you nasty bastards.
Yes.
That's what I'm going to be thinking now.
Yes. Whales, different story, but dolphins, yes. Nicole scoffs loudly at the girls' lack of remorse, but does nothing to reprimand the abuse or punish them. And I personally would be on the Quinn choo-choo, I'm sleeping on the beach train, because it just seems actually like quite lovely.
It probably would be lovelier in the room if his fucking mother did something about those two. Did you have your brother sleep on the beach? Okay, let's go to breakfast now. What the fuck?
I like Nicole being outside, though, so, you know.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. That is true. Yeah. I like being inside, so I want my mama to stick up for me so I can be there, but that's not the case. Mrs. Mossbacher is not your person.
Mama! Come on, mama! Speak up! Meanwhile, out on the beach, Quinn is waking up from his sandy siesta outside. He looks out onto the water and again sees something surprising. In the distance, there's a va'a, a traditional Hawaiian outrigger canoe, a few feet away from his lounge chair. He looks on in awe as the men fist bump each other and produce breakfast burritos and stand around shirtless, chatting it up. They unknowingly have Quinn's rapt attention.
Meanwhile, back inside, there is
another line here.
That was my comment. You can choose to use it or not use it. I thought you were choosing not to use it.
I just had a burp. That was all.
Oh, I wasn't looking at you. Sorry.
These can't possibly be the butt pirates Paula was speaking of. Perhaps they are the burrito pirates. And if they are, Tamara and I are coming aboard because we want to be wrapped up not only in their arms, but in that burrito lovin'.
In a warm tortilla
mm-hmm.
of love.
Yes.
Meanwhile, back inside the resort, breakfast is served and the newlywed Suttons are, quote unquote, enjoying their meal on the outdoor patio. Rachel's trying to explain her point of view about journalism to her husband, Shane. He may not think that it's a serious career, but there are serious reporters doing good work and maybe Rachel's just not one of them yet.
Uh-huh.
Shane nods along smiling and she adds, and now I'm afraid it's going to be even harder. He smirks and says, yeah, because now you can afford expensive facials.
What?
She asks him to be serious. Ha 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 ha, Shane is so funny. And he attempts to put on a McSerious face while she continues. So I was thinking that maybe I could just apply to a nonprofit and really dedicate myself and put journalism on the back burner for now. Shane agrees, but the subject is quickly changed when the Mossbacher family files past them. Rachel subtly, not subtly, covers her face and whispers, that family is so weird. The father's a pervert and the son always stares at my boobs. Yeah. Shane motions to the other side of the patio and adds, it can't be as bad as what happened to baby Jane over there.
That line,
and in the distance,
I totally burst out laughing when he said that. because I was like, kind of true there, Shane. Every once in a while, the broken clock can be right.
The broken clock can tell the right time twice a day. Oh, and in the distance, Rachel sees Tanya McQuad, who, of course, is making her way over to the couple, much to their dismay. She thanks them for being such troopers the night before, and Rachel asks how she feels, and Tanya admits, like I failed. Aww. I don't know what happened when I started spreading my mother's ashes into the water. It reminded me of feeding fish in an aquarium, and I didn't know if my mom wanted me feeding her to fish. Shane is surprisingly reserved, and when Tanya comments that the couple's breakfast looks delicious, he says, well, you should go get some, but kind of nicely and not in his asshole Shaney way. Uh-huh. And I have a theory I'm going to share at the end about Shane and Mrs. McQuad. Miss McQuad.
I am very intrigued. I can hardly wait.
Because, let me lay it out, he is a shit to his wife, mm-hmm. and is just kind of like, this is how it is, and this is the status quo.
Yeah.
But even though they were in a very shitty situation in the last episode with Miss McQuad, he was surprisingly not kind, but politish and a little cavalier when he's like, let me take the top off the urn.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he would be in with other people in similar situations.
Yeah.
So that being said, that's all I'm going to say until later.
Okay. Okay. Tanya does go to that buffet, and she sees Paula and Olivia in the buffet line, spooning more fruit onto their plate.
More fruit.
Regardless of the aforementioned fruit malabsorption, let me roll my eyes there. If you have that issue, that is totally fine. It's about Paula, not about. Olivia asks her friend, you're still not mad about that whole Trevor thing, are you? We're like, Trevor? Trevor who?
I know. Uh-huh. Like, is there another guy on the resort that we haven't met yet named Trevor?
Uh-huh.
No?
Okay. Paula shakes her head dismissively and Olivia continues, because if you liked some guy, you could totally trust me. I'm not going to swoop them out from under you. Trevor was just a momentary lapse in judgment. Paula shrugs, responding, I know, I trust you, but does she? No, 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 no. Like, you know, then I have the thought, okay, so Paula liked a guy named Trevor. They were kind of into each other, and Olivia swooped Trevor out from underneath her. And I'm all, it's one thing that when you're broken up with and you end up getting together with your friend's ex or whatever, like awkward, bad, whatever. But it's another thing when you intentionally go after your friend's current person. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that is super fucked.
Yeah, so that's a not good friend vibes. But B, Olivia kind of did her a favor, because if Trevor can be swayed by fucking Olivia, then Paula don't want that man. But still,
saved her some heartache down the line.
Still does not matter. Like, a friend does not do that to another friend.
So glad we don't have that relationship, Corinne. Especially because, you know, you are currently single, but don't be surprised if I come for a visit and I'm sticking your 2-foot Disney princess dolls into my suitcase and all your pretty purses as I talk like nothing's happening. Oh, it's like, yeah.
Look, just because I'm sending Larry love letters doesn't mean anything.
Oh, gosh darn it.
Which I would never, of course, do, because that would not be a cool thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You just Indiana Jones him when he came over to change your tire when you got that flat and you put love you on your eyelids and you just kept blinking slowly at him.
Yes. Then when you came back out, I was like, I couldn't blink my eyes because you would see it. And you're like, why are you blinking, Corinne? I'm like, I'm fine. Nothing's wrong.
Staring into the distance, like, very intensely. Is everything okay?
Yeah. Tanya meanders closer, greets them, and asks, did you guys get your backpack back? Tanya spoons food onto her plate as the two girls stare at her, dumbfounded. Blink, blink, blink. That's like their default response around Tanya.
And Corinne wouldn't be able to do that with her love you eyes.
Nope. The older lady adds, You left it on the beach yesterday. I found it and gave it to the hotel attendant with the khaki face. And I was like, oh no. Oh no, what kind of backwards thing is going to be happening now? She motions to a tan young man who is pouring water at a nearby table. And if ever there was the personification of a preppy pair of khakis, he and his frosted hair are it.
Hmm.
The two girls thank her and hurry off to talk to Khaki Face. Meanwhile, Armand is milling about the guests on the patio, glad-handing, when he hears Olivia's voice say, "Hey, dude!" He approaches the Mossbacher's table and the Diva twins accuse him. "You have our backpack." Khaki Face concurs. "Yeah, I'm pretty sure I gave it to you and it's in your office." Armand feigns ignorance, then remembrance. Using his best Jersey summer stock. "Oh, a green backpack. That's right. I think I do have it." He hustles off to fetch it and passes Shane's table. Shit show Shane. Shane, still understandably heated from the prior night's romantic candlelight dinner cruise, calls out to the hotel manager, who overtly ignores him, and Shane gets visibly angry. And you won't like him when he's mad. Rachel tries placating and refocusing him. "I'm trying real hard to talk to you about my future." He nods for a few seconds before saying, "I'm sorry, I gotta go handle this." Leaving his bride livid that he's still fixated on the fucking hotel manager. Also, she's trying to have an open-hearted conversation with him. And let's see how receptive he is to that.
Not at all, Corinne. In case you didn't notice, he walked away. Armand goes to his office and plucks the backpack out of his drawer. He heads back to the patio, but doesn't get very far before he's confronted by Shane, who angrily accuses, "I just saw you in the breakfast buffet and called your name and you purposefully ignored me." Armand does what he does best and tries diffusing the situation with positivity and says, "Good morning. My apologies, I was sent to fetch a bag. How was your candlelight dinner last night?" Shane thumbs his nose and responds, "That's what I wanted to talk to you about. It fucking blew." Armand feigns a remorseful, "Oh no," while Shane picks up speed. "You knew you put us on a boat with that fucking crazy lady who was spreading her mother's ashes. I'm trying to do a romantic gesture with my wife while there's some crazy lady having some kind of fucking nervous breakdown. It was a dumpster fire shit show." Armand apologizes again, then puts on an almost maniacal smile and answers, "I'm terribly sorry, but also, there's a really big surprise coming for you later, and I really think it's going to turn things around." Shane asks flatly, "Is it the pineapple room?" When Armand informs him that it's not, Shane explodes, "Then I don't give a shit. I don't want a free massage or another bottle of cheap champagne. I want to talk to your boss."
I love that it says cheap champagne.
You only get the best sheep champagne here at White Lotus. Armand's smile turns into a slight sneer and he informs him, "Well, I am the manager of this hotel." Shane knows and counters, "Yes, but I know that you have a boss and I want to speak to him." Armand's disposition continues to darken as he offers, "No problem, I'll have him call you." But Shane declines, saying, "No, I want to call him. Have somebody bring his number to my room this morning, please." Armand finally agrees, and once Shane is out of sight, he cries, "Motherfucker!" Then hightails it back into his office, where he takes all the drugs out of the girl's green bag and puts them back into his drawer, but not before swallowing a handful of pills.
I just had like a vision of him being like, "Hello, this is Armand's boss." Like,
yeah. Oh, he does something almost as bad.
Back in the dining room, the Mossbachers are finishing their meal. Quinn demands, "I need a phone. I can't go another day without being online." His father reminds him, "You had my phone all day yesterday." So Quinn looks around the table at each of his other family members for permission to use their cells. Not surprisingly, everyone declines. Now, you said surprisingly everyone declines.
Sarcastically surprisingly.
Oh, okay.
Surprisingly everyone declines was how you were supposed to say
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Okay. I didn't put the inflections in the right places, syllables.
Surprisingly, What? Everyone declines? So Quinn states, okay, but you guys are going to regret this. And he leaves the table in a huff.
In a huff.
Once he's gone to do, we don't know what?
Huffing?
Maybe this is his villain origin story? Did you have an idea as to what he was going to do, Tam?
He was going to go not be online. He was going to be offline.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Nicole posits, maybe we should have let him bring a friend. Olivia rolls her eyes. He doesn't have any friends. Nicole refutes, yeah, he does. Hiroki Takeuchi. Olivia shakes her head. Mom, he went back to Japan like 2 years ago. Nicole is once again surprised. Really?
Wow, you're not involved with your son's life? Shocker.
I know. And she gets up from the table and calls after Quinn's retreating figure. And mind you, Mark, during this entire time, just completely checked out of the conversation. Is he like trying to connect with Quinn? Is he like commenting about the friendship level? No, he's just in a skin suit at the table, kind of just occupying space.
He's still processing the gayness of his dead father, Corinne. That's what it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicole gets up from the table and calls after Quinn's retreating figure. Armand returns with the bag, stating, all's well that ends well. And Paula and Olivia snatch it and hurry away, leaving Mark confused and alone at the table. Except he's not quite alone. Armand is still standing there, giving him the eye. Not the eye, but the eye. The hotel manager rocks back and forth on his feet slightly as he says suggestively, you're looking really good today, Mr. Mosswalker. Mark nods slightly confused and responds, thanks, so do you? To which Armand gives him a very subtle winky winky. Mark's face falls and the hamster wheel in his head is screeching. What the fuck did he say to this man while he was drunk? Before Mark says, a little too forcefully, okay, thanks, see you later. Armand stays a moment longer, smiling even more salaciously. It almost is like in the old Disney cartoons when they had the three little pigs and the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
With the jagged teeth and like the drool coming out of its mouth. He's like that wolf.
Mm-hmm. With the awooga.
Yes, exactly.
And it's funny too because it almost seems like that happens when he takes the drugs and or alcohol, like he turns into a hornball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's nice because you can use the drugs and or alcohol as an excuse for turning into a hornball because drugs and or alcohol. Ta-da! Magic!
Yeah. Because I was like, that was a really quick turnaround. You took a few pills and all of a sudden you were like, hey there, sexy man. I was like, what was that? A matter of like 5 minutes? It might be a placebo effect where he's like, I could be completely inappropriate now because of the drugs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Armand says, looking at Mark like he's a snack and very hungry. Oh, yes, I will see you later.
I will see you later.
We'll see you later.
I will see you later.
Oh, yes.
I will see you later.
Later.
All of those. Yep. All of those words. Meanwhile, at the hotel spa, Tanya McQuad is waiting for her oxygen facial. Belinda finds her and brings her a cup of peppermint tea. Tanya drinks it as Belinda takes a seat across from her, and Tanya effuses. I really think you need your own business. You have a gift, and I could have some fun too, but it would be your vision.
Uh-oh. What's her fun? How is she involved in this all of a sudden?
Don't. She's the financier. She gets to have some fun. Corinne, it's only fair.
Okay.
Belinda agrees because she drinks this all in, her eyes twinkling with the possibility of being her own boss. Belinda thanks her profusely but remains reserved. And Tanya piles on even more praise. Finally, Belinda allows herself to get excited and sits next to Tanya. She says, I accept. I'd like to go into business. And then enthusiastically gives details about what their spa could be, but only for a moment because Tanya's facial therapist walks in. Tanya puts a finger up, stopping Belinda and saying, I really want to hear all of this, but I'll be much more clear after my oxygen facial.
Aren't we all?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Neither do I.
Is it just somebody standing in front of you going,
no, that's carbon dioxide. That's what you exhale is carbon dioxide.
And getting one of those like old timey
billows for the stove or the fire. I'm possibly getting an oxygen facial right now because there's oxygen.
Because you're wafting air towards your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you clear, though? Are you clear now?
So clear. You don't even know how clear I am.
She hands Belinda her leftover tea, saying, "Here, you drink this." She picks it up and looks defeated as she watches Tanya walk away. But before her financier rounds the corner, Tanya looks back at the spa manager and whispers, "Let's go into business together," which causes Belinda to smile broadly.
Aww.
First of all, who the hell wants your used, almost drunk up tea? Here, take my leftovers.
I would take your leftovers, Tam, so, you know, but...
Yeah, but that's us. Yeah. That's not Belinda and Tanya. I'd be like, bitch.
Yeah. Out on the pool patio, not the private plunge pool, let's not be confused about this, Paula and Olivia are sifting through the green bag and realize the drugs, Paula's thesis notes, are gone.
Yes.
The weed and the bong are still there, but the hardcore stuff, including the Klonopin and the Special K, have disappeared. Olivia gets an angry fire in her eyes as she asks, "Do you think that fucker stole our stash?" Dun ch dun 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 ch. Dun, 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 ch, dun, dun, dun. But Paula can't respond because Mom Nicole shows up and greets them cheerily. "It's the eye of the tiger. It's the thrill of the fight." The girls close the bag and try to look like everything's cool, 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 super cool. When Nicole asks, "Can you guys do me a favor and start including Quinn in your voodoo ceremonies or whatever?" Nicole begins slathering sunscreen on while she corrects, "In general, I don't think you realize how hard it is for kids like Quinn nowadays." Olivia squints her eyes and asks, "You mean because of his Asperger's?" Mom protests, "No, he doesn't have Asperger's," and then proceeds to go on about how hard it is to be a cis white male in this day and age. "All you have to do is ask Shane. He'll tell you." She punctuates her sentiments with, "Really, they're like the underdog right now. I can't tell you how hard it is to hire someone like Quinn, a straight white man, out of college at my company, no matter how impressive their resume is." So sad. There's my little tiny violin playing a little song. Paula finally turns around, looks at Nicole and asks, "Because you already have so many working there?" Nicole does not protest this fact, but adds, "I think we just have to understand how guys like Quinn can feel a little alienated from the culture right now." Quinn isn't having a problem. Just ask Shane. Paula turns towards Nicole and states, "I think Quinn is going to be just fine." And Nicole thanks Paula for that sentiment. Olivia keeps repeating, "Mom, cringe," throughout Nicole's statements about the beleaguered white man in hopes that her mother will stop talking. But she doesn't. So ultimately, Olivia puts on her sunglasses and informs Nicole, "Paula's meds are missing from the bag and we have to go find them." She pulls her friends away as Nicole asks, semi-concerned, "She's not going to have a seizure or something, is she?" To which Paula responds with, "I will if I stay here." And the girls hurry off.
Damn.
Whew. Back in the Palm Suite, Armand knocks on Rachel and Shane's hotel room door. He has a smile plastered on his face as he explains to Shane, "I know you said you didn't want my surprise, but I thought I'd bring it anyways." He motions down the hotel hallway corner, and emerging into view is... What came around that corner? Find out with us after the break.
What came around that corner was Molly Shannon. No, seriously, it was Molly Shannon, a.k.a. Kitty, Shane's mom.
Oh, yay.
She enthusiastically greets her son, and he looks thrilled to see her. Meanwhile, inside the room, Rachel hears this exchange, and her face gets more and more of a what-the-fuck look on it.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty bounds into the room and exuberantly greets Rachel by saying, "Oh, look, her face. She's as white as a sheet. Don't worry. I've got my own room and I'm only here for a day, maybe two. I know I'm crazy. This is so crazy, but I was so tense from the wedding." And then Kathy Clement, I swear this was her idea. She invited me to a nearby spa. And when I called Shane and heard how unhappy he sounded, I thought, I'll just pop over, see you guys, and give you a little love and be on my way. Rachel puts on her most polite face as Kitty hugs her and playfully pleads, "Please don't be mad." Rachel assures her that she's not, while Kitty gives the room a more thorough look and exclaims, "This is a nice room with a nice view, but it's definitely not the one I booked for you."
Kitty, queen of the backwards compliment.
Yes. Shane's eyes practically roll into the back of his head as he says, "Don't even get me started." And Rachel visibly tenses up. Kitty clocks this and changes the subject. "Oh my God, wasn't the wedding a complete blur? I don't remember any of it. And Rachel, you were the most beautiful bride." A little pale, "but you've got some color on you now and it looks good." Then she proceeds around the room, admiring certain things and criticizing others because she's the queen of backhanded compliments, while Shane happily follows her around.
Love. "You are such a beautiful bride. A little white, but beautiful. Thank you." Fuck right off.
"We couldn't tell where your dress started and you ended." And I put here, Corinne, what is more egregious on the what the fuck scale? Unknowingly getting booked on a funeral cruise while you thought you were having a romantic dinner, or having your mother-in-law show up on the third day of your honeymoon and your husband being okay with it?
Okay. The first one, that would be a good story to laugh about later.
Yes.
The funeral cruise romantic dinner combo.
I completely agree. That would be like a, this sucks in the moment, but oh my God, I'm going to be regaling people at dinner parties with this story for years to come.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I would say that Shane is not only okay with it, but he's thrilled. It's the most excited I've seen of him this entire trip. He's practically glowing.
Yeah.
And the surprise mom visit is obvs the like, what the fuck of these two.
Yeah. Because more of the implications of what that means for them.
The funeral cruise is not great, but I have a feeling that mom is going to be like herpes, around to stay, and sometimes will go away. But then when you're not expecting her, surprise, there she is again.
When you least want her to.
Exactly.
Case in point, your honeymoon.
Oh, my gosh. Back at the scuba pool, Mark and Quinn Mossbacher are floating in the water, waiting for the instructor to set up. Mark apologizes to his son for what he said the prior day before admitting, "I don't really remember what I said." He doesn't remember what he said to his son, or obviously Armand, because he was way drunker later in the evening. He started off the morning strong, though, with those Bloody Marys, and just continued on through. Quinn informs him, "You said having sex with Mom was like eating a bowl of worms?" Mark is stunned and asks, "Did I really say that?" Quinn nods. His father contemplates this and says, "Do you want to know the truth?" And I'm like,
"Say no, Quinn. Say no."
Yeah, seriously. I'm like, bowl of worms. Can we get back to that? Quinn looks like he doesn't want to know the truth. His parents' sexual revelations have been a bit much, but says softly, "Sure." I think he's just resigned to, like, dealing with the situation. Mark explains, "That's not your mom's fault that sex with her is like eating a bowl of worms. Okay, great. Thanks. I am lucky to have her, but the truth is I cheated on her a few years ago. Well, with one person, a few times." Quinn looks shooketh and asks, "Does Mom know?" Mark assures him that she does, and goes on to say how it was the worst time in his life. He did everything he could to get her to forgive him, and they did all kinds of therapy. And he bought her $75,000 bracelets. What would you do with $75,000? Get some bracelets, Tam?
Do you have to ask, promptly return them, and put a down payment on a house?
That wouldn't be enough for a down payment on a house.
If I don't live in California, it will be.
Okay, fine. Move away. That's great. Quinn looks as shocked about the price of the apology bracelets as he does about the infidelity. And I'm thinking that unless Mark has a trust fund, he basically used his wife's money to buy the apology bracelets. So how much of a gift is it? Here, babe, I spent a ton of your money on an expensive gift. Will you forgive me already? Mark then clarifies, with my money, not hers. But I kind of think it's still her money because they basically live off of her money and his money is just, you know, socked away. And then Mark moves on from this and continues to pass the wisdom of the ages down to his son. Are you ready for the wisdom, Tam?
No, I don't think I am. I and like Quinn will not just nod and say, sure.
In the moment, you're like a monkey. It's primal and you'll do anything to get your rocks off. And then later, you regret it. There's the man and there's the monkey. And sometimes you have to face down the monkey.
Wow, so wise. So glad you bestowed that wisdom upon us, Mark.
Oh, seriously.
It's a whole new insight into being a man. Back upstairs, Tanya gets off the elevator to see a slight bald man in beachwear cursing at her door. He repeatedly tries swiping his key card while muttering under his breath before Tanya informs him, "I think you have the wrong room. That's mine." The man looks at the room number and realizes she's right, explaining, "Ah, I'm so sorry. Me and my buddies from BLM go on this fishing trip every year, and we've had beers on the boat." He peers around the hallway corner and realizes his room is next door. Tanya is intrigued and stands there smiling at him as he asks, "Are you here with your family?" She tells him, "Oh, no, I'm vacationing alone." He is too, adding, "Well, same here. Kids are all grown up. The wife's divorced. Well, anyways, sorry I stood in your door." Once he's gone, Tanya goes into her room but is only there long enough to put down her sunglasses and clutch before there's a knock on their door. It's the guy again, and he asks, "I'm sorry. I know this might be crazy, but my friends are leaving tonight and I'm going to be here till the weekend, so I thought since we're both alone, maybe you'd like to have dinner with me at 7? Like, super casual." Tanya looks torn and says, "Well, I had plans tonight," then pauses and adds, "But I can change them." The man looks elated and finally introduces himself. "Oh, my name's Greg. Maybe I should have started with that." She smiles and says, "I'm Tanya McQuad." He smiles back as she slowly shuts the door on him, then opens it halfway, giving him a little bit of that razzle-dazzle smile, and then closes it again in his face.
Oof. And I'm suspicious of him. I don't think their meeting is accidental at all, and he really doesn't seem drunk to me. I'm wondering what his angle is, and I don't think he's involved with Black Lives Matter. I mean, he could be, but I'm guessing BLM stands for something else. Bodacious lads and men?
Oh, Corinne.
What?
If you only knew. If you only knew.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Bunnies.
I'm getting a faraway look in my eye because there's so much to unpack there. Nothing we'll get into here.
Uh-huh. But I was just like, scam alert, okay? Bunnies living mustily. Burning, lust-filled men, BLM. Any guesses? No. Okay, fine.
No. I can't think that fast. Not right now.
How about bamboozling?
Lecherous?
Man, child.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go. Tanya immediately calls downstairs to the spa and asks Belinda if they can change their dinner plans for the evening because she's got a date with a deep sea fisherman from Black Lives Matters. Just like, I don't think it's Black Lives Matters, but I completely am on the same page with you. I'm like, Black Lives Matters? What?
If you picture Black Lives Matter, that's the guy that you would see in your head. That would be on the forefront of that organization.
No.
Belinda's
happy and a little confused for Tanya and has no problem changing plans because it'll give her time to finish the business proposal she's begun writing up. She's like, we do not have people from BLM coming in through here. Meanwhile, in Armand's office, he is sniffing a crushed pill on his desk when his phone rings. It's Shane, and Armand cheerily asks, are you enjoying your mother? So Tamara says, is that not the worst way you could phrase that? And I say, with how Shane and his mom relate to each other, I think it may be rather apt. Shane shuts the formalities down by reminding him that he still needs Armand's boss's number. Armand assures him that he'll bring it over shortly before hanging up and cursing. Just then, Dylan knocks on his office door, and when he enters, Armand asks, "Are you good with computers? Because I need someone to make up a business card with a Lotus logo on it." Dylan doesn't respond and instead informs him, "The girls from the Tradewind suite want to talk to you." Armand, irritated, leaves his office in a huff.
In a huff.
But puts on his managerial facade when he finds Olivia and Paula in the lobby. He asks, "Ladies, how can I help you?" And they answer accusingly, "There's things missing from this bag. Paula's medication." Armand knows very well what was in the bag, produces a pen from his jacket pocket and hands it over with a challenging tone. "Well, if you'd like to make an inventory of what's missing, I will be sure to investigate it." The girls know that they cannot admit to half of the shit that is in that bag and mutters, "Never mind, there's too many," before walking away. And he looks triumphant. Meanwhile, in the ocean, Quinn is floating around alone without any electronic devices when he hears the native canoers practicing their strokes close by and goes over to chat them up. We don't hear what they say, but the group of guys seems to welcome Quinn's curiosity and questions. Yay!
Later that evening, Armand is in a full tailspin and has escalated to sneak drinking on the job, taking sips from a hidden cocktail in between seating guests for dinner. When he seats the Mosbacher family, he stands behind Mark and puts his hands on his shoulders while saying, "Mr. Mosbacher, you're looking very handsome tonight." He leans in close to his ear while addressing the table. "We have something very special for you tonight. The native islanders are going to do some traditional
Halloween entertainment." Oh, no.
Then I try to put on the Australian accent I can't read. "Going to do some traditional Hawaiian entertainment, which will begin right now with the blowing of the pew." Behind them, a native islander blows into a conch shell, then disappears. Paula looks at the entertainers sadly as they depart, remembering Kai's words about working for those who stole from you. Armand puts his hands back on Mark's shoulder and says, "Say, wasn't that a treat?" before hurrying away. Quinn watches him go, turns to his father and says, "Dad, I think that guy was hitting on you." Mm-hmm. Olivia looks pointedly at Paula and says quietly, "Probably because he's high on our ketamine." Mm-hmm. Mark assures his family that the hotel manager was just being friendly, to which Olivia counters, "He looked like he wanted to fuck you, Dad." Just then, Quinn points to his mom's wrist and blurts out, "Are those the $75,000 bracelets?"
Nice.
Nicole looks appalled and says, I don't know. Your dad got them for me, and I'm not sure how much they cost." While Mark is giving his son the shut the fuck up look, but Quinn continues undeterred. "And they just sit on your wrist like that?" Nicole finally says, "It is not polite to speak about the cost of things." And Mark tells his son sharply to drop it.
Okay. If we were Paula and Olivia, one, we would hate our lives. But if we were ourselves in the Paula and Olivia situation and we had a bag full of drugs that we highly suspect the hotel manager has taken our drugs.
Because I would be taking all the drugs and you would not be partaking them with me.
But I would be like, fuck that shit. Tam, you distract the hotel manager. I'm going into his office and looking around and seeing if I can snag those drugs back.
I don't think that those girls have much experience with getting one up on, because if I felt like I was wronged or did dirty, I'd be like, oh, my mind would be clicking furiously about what the fuck am I going to do to get back at you or get back what I deserve that's mine. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, much like their blink, blink, blink.
Yeah.
Their brain hamsters are going click, 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 click. Like they don't even know how to comprehend or what steps to take because they're not used to that situation and circumstance.
They're like, just give it back. Okay. Just give it back.
No. Okay, well, then I guess we're just going to walk away angrily.
Yes.
I think we're more resourceful, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. We make a better, like, power team duo, too. I
All we need is a bag of drugs.
Do we, though?
No, we don't. Maybe some pickles and nerd gummies.
Oh, my God.
Nerd gummy clusters.
Dude, if that fucking manager stole our fucking pickles and nerds clusters, it would be on.
It would be on.
Yes. At a nearby table, Tanya McQuad and Greg are sitting down for their date. Tanya tells him, "We better get the conversation out of the way because there's going to be a really loud luau performance later," which actually I think that was a really apt statement. Greg agrees, and then they both sit there awkwardly staring at each other. Tanya, who could tell her life story to a tree stump, seems at a loss for words. Banner writing, Tam. That was...
Thank you.
Oh, excellent line. Finally, after a long silence, she asks, "How did you get involved in BLM? That's so interesting." Greg shrugs and says, "Well, I was working at the Sheriff's Department in Grand Junction, and the BLM moved into the headquarters at Colorado, and it seemed like a good fit." Tanya perks up and asks, "What made you want to dedicate your whole life to activism? Was it one incident that was specifically brutal?" Greg looks confused and asks, "Activism?" And Tanya responds, "Yeah, Black Lives Matter." Greg begins chuckling and informs her, "BLM is the Bureau of Land Management." And I do not blame Tanya for that whole line of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Although, if she had done what I would have done, because I'd be like, that just doesn't make very much sense, I would have just typed BLM into my phone and, like, looked up, generally speaking, what other things start with BLM?
Yeah, I'm sure you probably would have got like 7 or 8 hits. What could have been that, could have been that, could have been that over Black Lives Matter.
Really? Only 2. Black Lives Matter and Bureau of Land Management were like the 2 things that were in the first page thing. Yeah.
Really? Yep. Surprising.
I thought I was going to get some really interesting. Nope.
Yeah.
Just Bureau of Land Management. I'm not saying that there aren't more, but that was just like right there at the top. Yeah.
I'm sure probably within the last like 5 years or so, people are like, "Oh, we got to change our initials. We can't be BLM anymore."
Seriously. Greg begins chuckling and informs her, "BLM is the Bureau of Land Management. I have 300 rangers across 10 states that report to me." Tanya looks less impressed by this revelation and admits she had him pegged all wrong. Then the Sutton family is seated by Armand, and he puts on his best host face as he gives them the best table to view the performance. Kitty practically purrs as she takes the menu and admires all the handsome shirtless men milling around. Shane wastes no time asking Armand for his boss's number, and instead of putting him off, like so many times before, Armand hands his guest nemesis a business card. Shane looks smug as Armand heads back to his host's stand to take another sneaky drink of his cocktail, and I, Dylan, the hotel attendant, with hungry eyes. He's got those eyes he can't disguise.
Back at the Mossbacher's table, Olivia informs her mother that she's been keeping an eye out on all the straight white men in the resort, and they seem to be doing fine. Nicole says, "Noted, but now it's okay to reduce everyone down to their race and gender, but isn't that the kind of thing we were fighting it against all these years?" Mark agrees and adds, "Yeah, I used to be the good guy that would call out racism and bigotry, but now I'm not allowed to say anything. I mean, why do I need to prove my anti-racist bona fides?" Ugh. Paula shrugs at him and says, "Because it's somebody else's turn to eat?" And Olivia concurs, "It's not about you, Dad, and it's time to recenter the narrative." Mark is fine with this, answering, "I don't want to be the center. Believe me, by all means, let's recenter over to Paula."
Asshole.
The girls smirk ever so slightly at each other, and Olivia asks, "By all means, what do you know about Paula?" Mark hesitates and admits, "Well, I know she goes to college with you and that she's a very intelligent young lady, but this isn't a job interview. It's vacation. Besides, what does Paula know about me?" She looks at him in deadpans. "Your balls are swollen." Mark retorts, "Well, they went down and see the door swings both ways. Paula never asked me any questions about myself." To which Paula looks at him pointedly and says, "I've got a question. What do you stand for?" Mark looks as if he doesn't know how to answer this question, and Tamara realizes how many times she said pointedly in this outline.
"I'm pointedly staring at you now." Back at the Sutton table, Shane encourages Rachel to tell his mother about that morning's revelation. Rachel tries declining because she does not want to discuss her existential crisis with his mother, not surprisingly. So Shane takes it upon himself to say, Rachel's decided to give up journalism. She wants to make a difference, but she finally figured out journalism is a sucker's game. I never heard her say that.
I know, right?
Rachel refutes, that's not what I said. And Shane plows over her, remarking, well, I mean, I think we all know that. He tells his mother, she was thinking about getting involved in a nonprofit. Mom, you do a bunch of shit with charities, so I thought you could talk to her about it. But the kind of charity Kitty does is making donations and being on boards and throwing parties. Rachel informs them that she wants to get a job in nonprofit, and Shane and his mother both dispute this idea loudly. Mostly Mom, who says, why would you want to do that? No, that's a bad idea. You don't want to do that. Shane nods in agreement before Rachel asks, well, why not? Kitty looks as if it should be obvious, but explains, well, it's just so limiting. You can do so much more by being on a board and hosting events. And the good part is you don't have to answer to anybody. Rachel counters, well, I want to do something meaningful. But Kitty is unrelenting. Oh no, those jobs are terrible and you don't make much money. Rachel squints at the irony of what they're saying. Well, I don't need to make that much money. Kitty looks at her patronizingly and says, nonprofits are about asking people for money. You already have money, so essentially you'd just be asking yourself for money. Kitty playfully holds up her hands, rubbing her fingers and thumbs together while singing, the money, 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 money. Shane joins in while shimmying his shoulders back and forth. Money, 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 money. It's totally weird, but not in a cool, weird way, in a just creepy, weird way. Rachel looks on appalled, and I, Corinne, am wondering if Island of Lies, I mean White Lotus, is part of the sunken place, but I admittedly haven't seen Get Out, so I could be speaking from my ass. Anywho, once their two-man performance is over, Kitty reiterates, we don't need to work. I mean, I worked hard at your wedding. It took 5 months, but I cannot remember any of it. Seriously, can you guys? Because I can't remember anything. It was a blur. Yes, we get it. Their wedding was so unmemorable, Kitty. Thank you. Rachel's face falls because this seems to be a recurring theme for Kitty. Every time they mention the wedding, she insists that it was unmemorable. It's almost as if it didn't happen. While Shane chuckles because his mom is up chuckling. So funny. I don't remember any of it.
Oh my God, that's so inhuman. Ah, yeah.
Nah.
Back at the Mossbacher's table, Mark finally responds to Paula by saying, see, this is the same old tribal thinking, replacing the old hierarchy with the new one. Nicole adds, my feelings are most of these activists don't want to dismantle the system of economic exploitation, not the ones that benefit them. They just want a better seat at the table of tyranny.
Oof.
Olivia argues unenthusiastically, no, that's just you, Mom. To which Nicole asks, well, what's your system of beliefs? Not capitalism or socialism. Is it just cynicism?
Oof.
Out of nowhere, Quinn, who's been silent this whole time, exclaims, what does it matter anyways? If we think the right things are the wrong things, we all do the same shit. We're all still parasites on the earth. There's no virtuous person here when we're all eating the last fish and throwing our crap into the ocean.
Sure.
During Quinn's tirade, Paula fixates on Kai, who's dancing a short distance away. Olivia follows her gaze before Paula abruptly stands, saying, I'm going to go back to the room. I don't feel good. Thank you for dinner. Olivia asks if she wants her to go with, but Paula declines. It seems she wants to be alone. Shocking.
Oof. After dinner, Tanya and Greg return to their neighboring rooms. After Tanya opens her door, she turns cautiously and Greg approaches her for a tentative kiss. They part and stand while Greg murmurs, well, he's looking down so he doesn't see Tanya, grab him and plant a long, single drag kiss on his face. They part again and he looks ecstatic, saying, wow, you just sucked the air right out of my lungs. Tanya asks if he'd like to come in for a nightcap, and he says, definitely. And they kiss more and practically fall through the hotel room door once it opens.
Back at Armand's office, he is getting rid of the fake business card evidence on his desk that he produced with Dylan, who is also there watching his boss spiral. Armand explains, "About last night, I was a bit drunk, and you may not know this, but I'm 5 years sober, so when I fall off the wagon, I get a little uninhibited." Dylan tells him, "It's all good. It happens." And this seems to incite Armand because he gets a lecherous look on his face and says, "And right now, I'm even more uninhibited. I'm obsessed with you. I want to get you naked. What do I gotta do? You can have tomorrow off. I'll give you whatever shifts you want." At first, Dylan seems put off by the proposition, but as Armand lists all the benefits, he seems to be relenting, and even more so when his boss produces a small baggie of white powder and proposes, "Let's party."
Oh, so uncomfortable, so uncomfortable, so uncomfortable.
I know, I was like, back away, back away, back away. It's not me, but still, back away, back away, back away, back away.
I'm like, it's kind of consenting, but also feels very rapey and power. Nah. Yeah.
Yeah. Power dynamic. Power dynamic.
Back on the patio, the luau performance is winding down and Olivia finds Kai, who's in his tribal costume. She overtly flirts with him, saying, "That dance was really cool. Did you grow up here?" The only thing she's not doing is, like, twirling her hair.
Yeah, seriously.
Kai informs her that he did and is friendly but noncommittal, as Olivia adds, "My family's here for a week or so." Winky winky. Up in the palm room, Rachel and Shane are having an argument about the night's events and the surprise mother-in-law visit. Shane cannot comprehend why Rachel is so upset, causing her to exclaim, "It's our honeymoon. It's so presumptuous." Shane argues, "Well, my mother loves you." Rachel counters, "No, she doesn't. And how would you feel if my mother just showed up? Like, I don't care if her mother loves her or not. It's not the time or the place. Jeez."
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I'm not going to show up on your honeymoon, Tam. Unless it's like some kind of like fun group travel trip. But like, if you're like off on a Hawaiian vacation with just you and your new man, I'm not going to be like, "Oh, hey, I'm here."
Yeah. And I'm not going to pop into your gynecology appointment to be like, "I have some notes on this week's outline, Corinne, that I want to go over to you quickly."
But that makes sense. I mean, you're welcome to. I have an appointment in a few weeks. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Got you. Yeah.
Shane dismissively picks up his cell phone and begins to dial while saying, "Well, that would never happen. Rachel's mom just showing up during their honeymoon." She asks combatively, "Why not?" To which he says, "Well, first of all, she can't afford the ticket." Rachel is fucking livid and cries, "That's so fucked up." He mutters, "Well, you know what I mean." I'm like, "No, I don't know what you mean. I'm sure her mom could scrounge up the money for a fucking ticket if she needed to." He's dialing the phone. A not in service recording plays over his phone. He checks the business card that Armand handed him and realizes that fucker gave me the wrong number. He gets up to put on his shoes and Rachel asks, "Where are you going? We're in the middle of a fight." Shane looks at her icily and says, "We have our whole lives to fight. I'm going to go apeshit on this guy," and leaves. It's the second time he has left during like something that's important to her to talk about. And he's like, "Oh, but the plunge pool room."
Yeah. Yeah. That would be like him going on a tirade about what a shit Armand is. And her be like, "Hold on, no. Did you see the prices on these oxygen facials?"
Yes, exactly. Although she would be more right to do that than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Armand's office, we see that Dylan has partaken of the drugs and possibly the proposition as he snorts a line off his boss's table. Oof. They make eyes at each other as the room gets more and more distorted. Dylan mumbles, "You're in so much trouble." And Armand, who has serious "I'm gonna fuck you" eyes, nods slowly, saying, "I know." They are both completely out of it, Dylan more so than Armand, and the attendant chuckles and slurs, "All right, let's party." Armand, who's had a lewd smile plastered on his face, murmurs, "Jesus, finally." And we see the two bathed in the dark glow of the office lamps as Armand begins kissing Dylan's neck and removing his shirt. Upstairs, Shane is making his way down to the lobby. He passes the Tradewind suite, where inside, Olivia and Paula are laying on their fold-out beds facing each other. Olivia asks, "Why did you leave?" And Paula informs her, "Watching the natives have to dance as entertainment for the people that stole their land, it's depressing."
Yep.
Olivia says, "I'm sorry my family's so fucked up, but I'm not like them. I'm your friend."
But are you, though?
No. No, you're not. Not a real friend. Shane finally gets to the lobby and finds Belinda behind the main counter, happily making copies of her business proposal. He tells her, "I'm looking for Armand." She politely explains, "He's gone for the night." Shane retorts confrontationally, "You sure about that?" And Belinda, who has exhibited the most competent customer service, which is true, does the right thing. But is it, though? It's after work hours. I would tell the customer they gotta wait until tomorrow. Like, I would not. No, that is not the right thing. When I leave messages on people's phones and I tell them when to call, I tell them when we're during our open hours, when we're seeing patients. I don't tell them like the half an hour beforehand when I'm there and I'm just dealing with shit. No, she threw him under the bus. "Oh, I'm going to go check his fucking room." No, don't check his fucking room. You boundaries, girl, boundaries. You tell him to you're going to do tomorrow because it's got to wait. He's not there. Fuck off.
At the same time, though, if Shane goes apeshit on her, if he directs his wrath towards Belinda, and she doesn't know this is going to happen, but if it was me and he was like, I'd be like, "Let me go get him. Hold on. I think he might still be in his office. This is above my pay grade and I don't want to deal with this shit."
I'd just walk away from him. Be like, "Bye." Belinda, though, smiles, stating, "You know what? He may be in his office, much like Tamara would probably do. I'll go check." Belinda tries getting Shane to wait at the counter, but he declines and follows her to Armand's office door. Belinda knocks quietly, and when there's no response, she offers, "Sorry, he's not there." But Shane is unrelenting and insists, "I can hear someone in there." Belinda hesitantly opens the door to see Dylan leaning over his boss's desk. "Okay, and I'm sorry, Armand, but this is your fault because you should have fucking locked that door."
Uh-huh.
The door, see Dylan leaning over his boss's desk naked with Armand, who's also naked, face fully up in his ass, eating it. Good. Belinda looks shooketh, and Shane smiles slyly as he drinks in the sight. Armand finally realizes they're not alone and says, "Holy fuck." As Shane hurries away into the night, grinning from ear to ear and muttering to himself, "You are so fucked now." As the light from tiki torches flicker on his face, making him look positively devilish. The end.
Devilish.
This episode went super long because there was so much crap happening in it. I'm going to propose that we say everybody in this episode are bad decision dinosaurs because nobody made good choices.
Yes. Although I would say if there were no subtext, Belinda gets a good decision gnome for her business plan, and Tanya gets a good decision gnome for going out with the guy, and regardless, Quinn gets a good decision gnome for approaching the dudes in the canoe.
Noted. Yes, I will agree with those. I accept.
Yeah.
Everybody else, bad decision dinosaurs.
Yes, everybody bad, else, bad. 100% bad decision dinosaurs.
Multiple levels. From like 2 to 5. So it's just all bad.
It's just all bad. Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have episode 5, which is called The Lotus Eaters, which if this episode did not have a foreboding title, the next one certainly does.
And if you have any thoughts about all of the shit that went down and the shit's about to hit the fan, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. And you can reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But we'd like to thank you for stopping by this week. And we bid you farewell with a happy Halloween and one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. Yay! Oh.
Sometimes I make a mistake.
We are the Misfits. Our songs are better.
We are the Misfits. The Misfits. And we're gonna get her. Not that I remember it at all. And three, two, one.
No, we gotta do that again. That was terrible. Go ahead.